So we're going to be speaking about something very interesting today, about finding hidden treasures and where to look for the hidden treasures, because I know most of you are interested in gold. Anyone here not interested in gold? Raise your hand. See, everybody's interested in gold. So there's, of course, it's Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. So most people are Artha. And then Kama, and when you get really upset with the material world, what do? Moksha, you want to get out. Okay. So we're on the second stage right now, the gold stage. Karanya. Okay, first we'll chant Jaya Radha Madhava. Jaya Radha Madhava Kundavina.
Oh,
Shima, whose divine grace Abhaya Charana Anabhata Padana Gosami Maharshila Prabhupada Kijai. Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijai. Natakoti Vaishnava Vrindakijai Acharya Srila Vedas Thakur Kijai. Rense Kahoshi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shirvaita Kadata Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrindakijai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopakapata Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavadam Kijai Vajradam Kijai Navadiddam Kijai Jagadavasami Kijai Om Ganatya Vananda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Jakshuru Medikam Shigur Veda Maha. I offer my respectful obeisances and to the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded from the darkness of ignorance. So we put together this presentation about digging in the right place or not digging in the wrong place. Because I had an interesting conversation with one of my disciples the other day. I was asking him, where did you and your family dig the most for happiness? And he was thinking about it, and he said, Disney World. No, in other words, how many times did you go? And I was expecting, you know, 2-3 times. 17 times.
Oh,
17, not 7-0, that would have been 7. And I was thinking, wow, because just comparing Disney World, and I've been there too, you know, and Krishna conscious reasons, anyway, I won't be trying to talk about this. But once. So, I was thinking you go there and there's great expectation of happiness. This is Bhagavad Gita actually talks about Disney World. Did you know that? It says happiness is the mode of passion. It's like what?
Sweet in the beginning.
Nectar in the beginning, what's in the end?
Poison.
Poison. We got some sound effects here too. Because he wants to go to Disney World. He wants to take his mother out of this situation. So it's like, so I was asking her, so you go in there with great expectations, you know, wow, joy, beautiful, Garanga. And then, were you happy when you went out, when you left? No, he said, we were tired, we were hungry, the kids were cranky. Of course, they took the kids, I mean, it wasn't just him and his wife on a romantic adventure. So he said, we were just like miserable. And I remember too when I used to distribute books, because here we're talking about book distribution. I used to distribute books too. They're surprising that they see it many, many years ago. And I was one of the biggest book distributors too. Anyway, so we would go to Disney World. I was in Florida. We'd go to Disney World. And we would approach people going in, but we couldn't approach people going out. I have to wonder why we got kicked out, too. That's a different story. But we would approach people going in because they had this, wow, expectation, joy, happiness, and coming out, get out of my way. You know, Robert, I think, was coming out of Disney World. So it's like that. We're digging in the wrong place. So I was inspired after talking to him about looking in the right place for happiness. And then I remembered a story that Srila Prabhupada told us, that's in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it details this story about an astrologer talking about how to dig in the right place to have your happiness. Of course, we'll talk about who that astrologer is. You can also see the screen with the camera.
Okay.
You should see the screen and me too.
Okay.
I'm a TV personality, so make sure. Facebook personality. So,
change.
Okay, that's nice. So, anyway, so this presentation is called Don't Dig in the Wrong Place. And here we see someone who's digging apparently in the wrong place. Because he's going to get run over by a car. So, of course, this is based not only on Srila Prabhupada's translation commentary on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but also on Sripad Madhvacharya's commentary on the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This story is Madhvacharya's story. Those of you who don't know who Madhvacharya is, he's the great Acharya in the Brahma Madhva Sampradaya. And his main headquarters in India is in Udupi. Some of you, of course, have probably been there. So this is from him, this story. And so this story was told to Sanatana Goswami by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Here you see Lord Sanatana Goswami and Lord Chaitanya. And as I said, it's based on Madhvacharya's commentary on the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So let's talk about astrology, which is very important. Particularly, we're interested in something called the Bhrigu Samhita. Now, some of you may have heard about that before. I know many people go to India to have a Bhrigu reading. And they tell you who you were in your past life, what your birthday is, what you will be in your next life, and all sorts of nice things so you can just sit back and relax because it's all going to happen automatically. So I don't advise going because whatever will be, will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera, is the song. So even in the Vedic system, now we've been talking about Vedic thieves. Because if you're going to be a thief, be Vedic about it. Yeah. Because do it properly, efficiently. So even in the old days, the thieves would consult astrologers. There's some stories I'm going to tell about that, how thieves would consult astrologers. So let's talk about this. So there's a story about Sanatana Goswami, who you mentioned before, is talking to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He at one point had to escape from jail. The reason he escaped from jail, he wasn't a criminal, but the reason he escaped from jail is he was being held by the Nawab Hussein Shah because he wanted to be Krishna conscious, and the Nawab Hussein Shah wanted him to be his minister. So he escaped, and he thought he had nothing with him that could cause people to steal from him. But his servant had 8 gold coins. So this expert astrologer that was hired by the hotel keeper, this is one of our standard hotels, Ramada Inn or whatever. Anyway, in India they have hotels like this, you see. So his hotel keeper had an expert astrologer, and he said, after glancing at the palms of his visitors, he said, they have 8 gold coins. Hotel keeper was thinking, let's kill and take the old gold coins. But Sanatana Goswami, being very intelligent, understood that too much devotion is the sign of a thief. Like if someone comes up to you and says, you are so nice, you are so wonderful, or they say to a lady, you are so beautiful, you look like you're 20 when you're actually 95, then you know. Then you know someone's going to cheat you at that point. So this hotel keeper was treating Sanatana very nicely. So he knew something was wrong. Asked his assistant, Ishan. He said, what do you have? And Ishan said, I have 7 gold coins. He didn't tell the truth. And so he gave those coins to the hotel keeper. Hotel keeper felt guilty. Then the hotel keeper said, I'll help you escape, help you cross the mountains. So there's an instance of the proper use of an astrologer if you're a thief, a hotel keeper. And there's another story about Parikshit Maharaj in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Parikshit Maharaj, of course, was saved by Krishna when he was in the womb of his mother, Uttara. And as soon as he was born, they called for the Kovida, the expert astrologers, and they predicted that he would pass away being bitten by a snake bird when he got older. So they knew everything, basically, about his life. Even be an expert devotee, he preached Krishna consciousness,
defend the world from Kali Yuga, and then eventually be passed away. Pass away by the bite of a snake bird. And Prabhupada, too, had an astrologer tell his fortune when he was young. And Prabhupada's astrologer, when he was just a kid, maybe, said when he is 70 years old, he will cross the ocean and open up 108 temples. Wow, what a prediction. And it came true. Exactly what the astrologer predicted. So these were expert astrologers. Of course, be careful. I'm not making a plea or an advertisement for astrologers that all of you run to India or ask me who my favorite astrologer is. Most of the astrologers are cheaters. And people go to the astrologers because they want to hear about themselves. So Prabhupada was not that interested in astrology. And there's also Lord Chaitanya would have an astrologer too. Lord Chaitanya was joking with this particular individual. And it was an astrologer. He said, please tell me my fortune. And the astrologer said, I meditated, because in the old days the astrologers could meditate too. And he said, oh, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, I've seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Lord Chaitanya said, you're wrong. I was a cowboy in my past birth. So both are true, of course. So this way, the astrologer told the fortune of Lord Chaitanya. So the astrologer is understood to be like a guru in this particular metaphorical comparison. Metaphor means it's a story that isn't actually true, but it points out or makes a point that's important for us.
I apologize.
I guess someone wants a ride on the cab. Don't worry, that's not Uber. So,
yeah.
So one has to approach a spiritual personality like Sanatana Goswami, who you see here, is approaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with humility. He has the tradition in India is to put some grass between your teeth and bow down. And Krishna also mentioned this in the Gita, Advidi Pranipatena Adiprasnena Sevya. That one approaches the spiritual master or spiritual personality with an attitude of service and submissive inquiry. And Sanatana Goswami approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and basically he didn't say I'm a poor man, but he said I'm suffering. I don't know anything about this world. Most of us are very proud. We're proud of our learning, our money, our education, our bodily beauty, our birth, our caste, or all these different things that we can be proud of. So in order to make spiritual progress, to find out where the wealth is, you have to take advice, like the treasure map. So here we start. That's, of course, not Sanatana Goswami. This is a poor man, as you see. He's just begging for a cup of coffee or whatever. With his tin cup. And he doesn't know that he really has money that belongs to him that was left to him by his father. Here's his house. Not that bad. So he approaches an astrologer to find out, you know, help me, help me. And as I said before, metaphorically, the astrologer is the guru. So to approach the guru properly, we have to just say, help me, I don't know anything. Because if we think we know something, it's like teaching someone to play the piano when they taught themselves or think they know how to play the piano. It's twice or 10 times as difficult, isn't it? So you go to a piano teacher and you say, boy, I know how to play the piano, just give me a few tricks. And he'll say, okay, that'll be twice the price for you. Because he has to endeavor twice as much. So the astrologer is metaphorically the guru. So the poor man is approaching this astrologer. What can I do about my life? And the astrologer explains that you have this treasure that was left to you by your father. Now, generally, in India, if you have treasure, you put it in the ground or bury it or something like that, right? That's true. Because nowadays, after the rupees, you know, 500 rupee note, 1,000 rupee note was useless, then Everyone's treasure was useless. But it was good for some of the temples in India. I'll tell you what, I had one of my friends in Gujarat I was just speaking to him. He said, someone came who wanted to give like 20 crores to get a barrel full of rubies. So it was actually a very good move so the temples could get quite wealthy. Because the temples don't have to explain their source of income because everybody puts the money in the hundi. So we want to thank Moni about this. I was speaking to my friend who said, no, we have no problems economically now. We should save us. So, anyway, so people bury treasure in different places. But it's hard to figure out. Actually, there was one story that had nothing to do with this story here. It just came to mind. About reincarnation. There was one girl who took birth, let's say 100 kilometers from her previous life's birth, and she was married to this man who passed away. And they brought her back to her village, and she knew exactly where the treasure was buried. Proof of reincarnation right there. So, this is a different story. So we all have this wealth, hidden treasure, and this poor man has this hidden treasure. And of course, the hidden treasure is actually Krishna consciousness. And there's Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embracing the deity of Krishna, playing the flute. And so that will give us what? Kevalanandakana. Mm-hmm. Unlimited happiness. It's a source of unlimited happiness. Whereas other things is like going to Disney World. Or Disneyland. Or whatever. Oh, another thing is when we used to distribute books and to movie theaters, outside of movie theaters, we'd only approach the people going in, not going out. It was the same reason. When they came out, they were super cranky. So that's the material world. Expectations. It's like a facade, movie set. Another example is when I went on a trip to Hollywood one time. I wasn't an actor. Went on a trip to Hollywood. We saw all these movie sets, and like Western movie sets, cowboys and Indians. Not from India. And they were just facades. Facades means just a store in front of the storefronts or something like that. And you walk behind, it's just scaffolding. That's this world. Okay. So here's what the astrologer tells us and told his poor man. He told him, you have a great hidden treasure. So I'm making the comparison, the metaphorical comparison, with three aspects of bhakti. First one is sambandha. That means, what do you have? What is the treasure? And the second thing he's going to tell this man is, how do you achieve this treasure? That's the process, bhakti yoga. For us, bhakti yoga, for him, digging in the ground in the right place. It's all metaphor. That's called abhideya. And then finally, what to do when you find it. Of course, this astrologer, this story didn't tell him what to do. But we understand the guru tells you what to do when you find the hidden treasure. And you progress to different stages, so you're in so much ecstasy from finding the hidden treasure of bhakti that you forget about everything else. You're rolling on the ground in ecstasy, crying in ecstasy, just saying grungle all the time. So that's called prayojana. And so the question is, where do we dig? Or where does this man dig? That's a big question. So we have, in this particular story, there's four directions. I know there's more directions, you know, instead of north, south, east, and west, there's northeast, northwest, you know, all these other things. But in this particular story, there's four directions, and I'm going to explain why there's four directions at the end of the presentation. How should we go to the south? Should we go to the south? What's that? A wasp. That's a maha wasp. It's a big wasp. You just stay away from that guy. You know? This is from a horror movie, you know, The Attack of the Wasps or something like that. So, the south is called, does anyone know the Sanskrit word for south?
Dakshin.
So, the south is called Dakshin. And the reason it's called Dakshin is very funny. Because south represents, in this particular story, the karmakanda process, which karmakanda means doing things without consideration of God or the demigods, doing things just for material benefits, sacrifices, and stuff like that. Like Arya Samaj, stuff that's karma kanji. So Dakshini, because they're interested in Dakshini. You understand the play of words? Prabhupada made that comparison, actually. It's not a comparison. So in the south, you have the karma kanji process, and these are the Vedic rituals, and it's a problem. Because basically, here's our friend who's interested in Dakshini. Here's the funny promise. Give me my Dakshini. That's from a cartoon, a famous cartoon in India. And the south is under the direction of Yamaraj also. And Yamaraj, the point is, that Yamaraj counts when you've been good, when you've been bad. And it's not simply a karma kanja process. He either punishes you or rewards you. And very few people that I know want to come in contact with Yamaraj, right? At least in a bad way. So this is a problem in the south. So let's not go to the south. And also, here's an example. Yudhisthira's attachment to mundane dharma is indicative of this same consciousness. Because Yudhisthira was thinking, I just want to follow the truth. But when Krishna said to him, what? Does anyone know what Krishna said? Say Ashvatthama is what?
Dead.
He said, no, Krishna. I'm not going to listen to you. I'm a karmakanda. I'm going to tell the truth. So this is an example of that from the Mahabharata. Instead, Krishna had to make some other arrangement, and Alvane and Ashvatthama was dead, and you all know that story. So, this is a problem. So, what about the West? What is that? Does anyone know? That's a temple figurine, but it represents what? Nobody knows? A yaksha.
Yaksha.
Yaksha. Who are the associates of Kuvera? Kuvera's kind of nice because he has all the money. We don't mind him. But his associates can get a little heavy. So there's a yaksha in the West. And what does the West represent? What's that? That's evolution. No, that's what people will look like 50 years from now. But anyway, so it represents the mental speculative process of trying to understand the absolute truth, which is called Gyanakanda. And Gyanakanda... In Gyanakanda, you're thinking, I know so much, my mind will protect me, I'm the most intelligent person, I can figure it all out, right? That's Gyanakanda. That was the best picture I could figure out. Only Krishna can protect us. Isn't it? Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshaman, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Padimam. Krishna, protect us, help me, save me. Not your mind. Not your mind. I mean, there's famous atheists, who I won't mention, who are completely crippled, disabled, and they can't do anything, but they're still challenging God. Actually, one thing that's really interesting is that they have complete faith there's no God. It takes a lot of faith. Everybody at all times has faith in something. People exist by faith. So that's quite a jump conclusion to say that there's no God. That means you must know everything to conclude that there is no God. Anyway, so we think that our mind protect us. But what about, let's talk about the north. Okay, we got a problem with the north. I don't know if you can understand this picture, but here's a guy being swallowed by a python. So don't dig in the north, because the north indicates something we call monism. Monism means to think that everything's one, and when I become Krishna conscious, we'll all merge into ourselves, me and Adideva, everyone. You're my guru, I'm your guru. Is that? You're Krishna anyways. See, you married Krishna. And he's pretty good, isn't he? Must be one of the dwarf bosses. So there's a problem. The problem with the north And it's like a business serpent, too.
Oh,
and we've seen a lot of these in Mayapur. One time I almost stepped on a cobra. I was walking at night and the cobra was there. I actually saw him just in the last minute and I said, excuse me. So it's spiritual suicide. And any resistance, nothing at the end, or even voidism, like this taught in some so-called spiritual past. You know, that everything is nothing. You just end your existence, and that ends all the problems. The problem is it doesn't end all the problems. Because whatever your karma is, in your next life, you've got the same problem. Or even in this life, let's say we're in a particular place. Let's see, I'm here at Nukaloka, right? I hope so. I'm here at Nukaloka, and there's some problems, like we have to renovate the bottom floor of the building. I'm thinking, I was just in Houston, for example. They have so much money there. They got inheritance of $23 million. Not inheritance, but someone gave it to them. Pretty good. So I went there, and the Tulsi house there. I asked them, how much did you pay for it? Well, $100,000, just very little. So, yeah. So I was looking at that and saying, maybe I should just move to Houston. I was sitting down, I said, yeah, the weather is nice. Of course, they had flood there, what I'm saying. But the weather's nice. And then I was thinking, but wherever I go, I take my mind with me. And whatever I'm supposed to suffer or enjoy, of course, obviously I'm trying to channel Hare Krishna, there's no karma, but I'm just making an example here. Whatever I'm supposed to suffer and enjoy, it's going to happen whether I'm in Houston or in Hillsboro or in Alaska. It's going to happen. So it's not going to do me any good, happiness-wise, to switch from one place to another. But if I switch my consciousness, then it really can make me happy. So we're not interested in the spiritual suicide, or just going here and there, thinking this is going to make me happy. So let's talk about the East. The East is good. Actually, Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya said that the further west you go, things get more materialistic. Of course, I know the world's round, you go all the way west, you're from India. But anyway, but from India, the further west you go, here we are in America, you know, it's pretty materialistic here on the East Coast, right? Go to the West Coast, whoo! People don't like us who live in the West Coast, but we say that whatever is loose, and you shake America up, it ends up in the West Coast. And whatever falls out of the West Coast ends up in Hawaii. Anyway, so the further west you go. So we're interested in going east. And that's Krishna consciousness, which means you just do everything for Krishna. Yat karoshi yas nasi yas jaloshi vidashi yat vipashashi kumbhya. Tat kurushwa parapara. Whatever you do, whatever you offer, should be done for Krishna. You know, dancing, chanting, having a good time, enjoying Krishna consciousness. So this is where the wealth is. So Krishna consciousness, and we can get a little philosophical here, you have to excuse me. Krishna consciousness is actually the Vedas, or the purpose of the Vedas, as we'll hear when we hear this verse from the Bhagavad Gita. And there's different Vedic paths, but Krishna consciousness is the ultimate Vedic path. So here are the different Vedic paths. There's six Vedic paths. And these are called darshans. Those of you who understand Sanskrit, darshan means to see or where you go, like this. So the first one is yoga. That's actually one of my disciples there. And I taught him everything he knows. Yeah. His name is Gokul Chandra. He lives right now in Malaysia, and he's from Finland originally. So, anyway. See? Know a lot of things you didn't know about. So, no, I didn't teach him these postures, but he's a famous yogi, he's one of the world famous yogis. Any chance Hare Krishna is a devotee, but I'm using this picture to illustrate the point. So, yoga, of course, that's Patanjali's system, and Patanjali ultimately does say the whole idea of yoga is to control your mind, control the turn of the mind, and surrender to God, and love God. First thing he talks about is Ishvara. Ishvara means God in Sanskrit. So there's the yogic system, And all these different postures that people think is actually yoga, which isn't actually yoga, have nothing to do with yoga. It's just postures. Patanjali only taught two postures. Nowadays they have thousands. There's another thing called Sankhya, which works with yoga. Sankhya is the philosophy behind it, the original yoga taught. Sankhya means the analysis of the different material elements. And we're not talking about the periodic table of elements that some of you studied in school. We're talking about earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, the active senses, the perceptive senses, the sense objects, and ultimately the super soul and the soul. So Sankhya means to count. You don't have to understand the chart. It's not really for you to study. But it means to count the different elements of the material world, try to figure things out. Like we saw that big guy with the brain before, remember? That's Sankhya. Those are two of the paths, yoga and Sankhya. The next one is called Nyaya. That's not a Spanish word. Nyaya. Nyaya. No, Nyaya means logic and reason. Logic, which is used in all the Vedic paths. That's fine. We have no problem with that. But you can't understand God. Kargo pratishta shudina vivina. That's from the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata says, by logic you can never nor even study the Vedic literatures can you understand the absolute truth. But only by Mahajanayena. What's the rest of the verse? Anyone know the verse? Mahajanayena. What? Katasa Panda. You gotta study more. Mahajanayena, only by following the footsteps of the examples of great acharyas, like we have our divine gracious Prabhupada. That's the only way to figure it out. According to Yudhisthira Maharaj, Mahabharata. So that's logic. Another one is like Vaisheshika. And that's not the devotee who distributes books. Who's a great devotee. But it refers to one of the original Vedic philosophies of what's called atomism. In other words, talking about how there's only particles and space between the particles. And the ultimate reality is there's just space. And just particles. Sounds like modern science, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. So that's the modern version of this Vedic system. And then there's the Karma Mimamsa, which we mentioned. That's the South. Remember the South? We talked about the South. Anyone remember what the problem was, what the animal was in the South?
A wasp.
A poisonous wasp. So there's Karma Mimamsa. You know, we have nothing against wedding rituals, but someone thinks that's the all in all, even though I'm a sannyasi. Nothing against it. I think that's all in all. And then ultimately we have something called Uttara Mimamsa. That means the highest. And that's Krishna consciousness. And of course there's also another type of the monism which we talked about. But let's just talk about Krishna consciousness. So these are the Vedic paths. And what does Krishna say about all these Vedic paths? What does Krishna say about the Vedas? He says, Sarvasya Chavam, and we can all read this together. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and gratefulness. By all the days
I am to be known, indeed I am the Kavaya of Vedanta, and I am the Lord of the Vedas.
So anyone have any quick questions? Questions, comments before you go on? Yes.
Yes. So anyway, you were talking about the mental speculators.
Yeah.
I used to read these books like, you know, The Power of the Subconscious Mind and different things. And it makes sense to like a point, but then like they would always... Oh, give me the mic.
That's all right. He's loud.
Okay. But
they would you know talk about some positive things, but then you know they always go into this whole mental speculation, and ultimately like the mind is God. It's just they just keep going into mental speculation. It doesn't make much sense after a while.
Yeah, you get lost in the mind. Very good. Very good. Okay, anyone else have a question about
Because we presented something very deep, these what are called the six darshans, the six Vedic viewpoints and the ultimate Vedic conclusion. So this is really important. This also is connected to looking in the right place for our ultimate happiness. Because simply by yoga, you know, the materialistic yoga, counting material elements, by thinking everything is an atom or whatever, logic and reason or the karma mimamsa process, it doesn't make you happy. It doesn't make you happy. What makes you happy is simply chanting the Lord's name, connecting with your real nature, which Krishna says in the Gita, Mami Bhavasa Jiva Loke Jiva Dasanati. You're part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna is ours as Father. So, wow. And he'll protect you, he'll give you whatever you need. Anyone know that verse? No one knows the verse. What is the translation?
Krishna says that he provides what we lack and
he reserves what we have. It's right there. Oh my God. It's important for everyone to learn verses at least in English. And to learn the meaning of the verses too. I have a very nice system of learning verses is when I read a verse, I cover up the translation of each word in the verse and try to guess at it, and after a while I remember the meaning. And then the verses come alive. Alright,
when we do an analytical study of Prabhupada's books,
like
Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, is it called Jnana Yoga?
In one sense, yoga means to connect yourself with Krishna. So once it's not in the strict, let's say, Jnana Yoga sense that's separate from Bhakti Yoga, but it's part of Bhakti Yoga. There's a Jnana Yoga that's part of Bhakti Yoga. So if Krishna says, he who worships, who studies this, worships me with his intelligence, that's what the Bhagavad Gita. But it has to be done in a mood of bhakti. Like if you're studying Bhagavad Gita, so you can impress people with how many verses you know, or be like the south in the Brahmin who was in the south who just wants to make dakshin from his verses. And there's people like that. You know, just like we'll give a kata and we'll charge for it. So there's people like that. So then it's